Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and of course, my co-host, as always, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Well, hello, sir.
Hello,
how are you?
Hello. Yeah, I'm a little tired.
Good to see you. I know you were telling me what happened.
Yeah. Just friends in town, you know, mm-hmm. And I suggested to them, how about I take you to a restaurant that's off strip, you know, so right. You don't have to eat at your casino right. hotel. I can take you somewhere else. So I took them to a restaurant called Izakaya Go. Uh-huh. Izakaya Go is a Japanese tapas and bar. So
did we go there? I feel like we went there.
We did not
in
go
a
there.
Little strip mall.
I did take you to a place, but
what was that place? It was like a Japanese place too.
It was Trattoria Nakamura, which was a Japanese and Italian fusion place, which is also amazing, right? So these are funny. Hidden gems. And the reason why I wanted to go to Izakaya Go is because I have gone to their sister restaurant, which is also in the Spring Mountain kind of, you know, Asian restaurant area, part of Vegas.
Right.
And I have been binging on this series on Netflix called Midnight Diner. I don't know if you've seen this or not. It's basically set in Tokyo, and it's basically a series about a diner that's only open from midnight to 7 a.m. That's it.
Wow.
And there's only one thing on the menu, but the guy that owns the place, just one guy in there doing all the cooking and everything, he owns it. If you ask him for something, if he has the ingredients, he'll make it for you.
Wow.
So that's what So I've been getting into this.
Is this the place that's in like a subway station or something? That's not that place.
No, you're talking about something else. I know what you're talking about. No, this is not the subway station one. And this is scripted. This is not a documentary.
Oh,
it's scripted. But it's gotten me on this crazy kick where I'm just wanting to try these traditional Japanese dishes. And this restaurant has them. Izakaya Go has all this stuff. Like, for instance, in the series, there's these three sisters that come in and they mm-hmm. always order this Japanese dish called chazuke. Chazuke is sort of a rice dish, but the rice is sitting in a kind of a broth of green tea broth. Right.
Oh, wow.
And on top, you can choose either pickled plum, salmon, or fish eggs. So you choose the topping. And so they have it in the series and they have it at this restaurant.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
We ordered all this stuff and it was amazing.
Oh, that sounds really interesting.
Oh, it's so good. But the other thing I was going to tell you, you know me, I'm not typically a drinker, but in this series, everyone's either drinking in Japanese, sake, or they'll say biru, which is beer. So I've been drinking Japanese beer almost every day now for the last 2 weeks.
What's wrong with you? Who are you?
The show. I know. I'm turning into Robbie McNeil. I definitely don't like alcohol, but I will say, Japanese beer is pretty darn good. Sapporo,
especially with the food,
exactly.
If it's paired with the right food.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So the next time you're in Vegas, I really want to take you and Rebecca to this restaurant. It's so amazing. It's so good.
We'll do it.
Oh, yes. So yummy. All right. So this week's episode is Year of Hell.
Part one. Yeah. This is a famous episode.
This is a big episode. Definitely.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited about this. Did you want to say anything right now about it, or just talk about it when we come back from the
Well, meeting? I know this is a very big episode. Was this the episode that we took to the Museum of Television and Radio? Didn't we do like a screening?
Is this the one? Yes, we did do a screening, but I thought it was a different episode. But if you might be right.
It might be this episode. We did a big screening and a panel there.
Yeah, with fans. At the Museum of Television and Radio in Los Angeles. I do recall that. The entire cast was there. We were all there for that.
Yeah.
And you think it was this episode?
I think it was this episode. Okay. I do. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
That's, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Excited to watch this one.
Let's go check this out. All right. We'll be right back, everyone. See you soon. We are back from watching Year of Hell Part One. Woo, boy.
Boy, that was a lot.
There's so much going on.
There's so much. I was like, normally I'm making notes and I'm remembering like little details and I'm able to kind of pause now and then. I literally every 5 seconds I was pausing, making notes like, oh my God, wait, I gotta keep this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I gotta keep this organized because it's so complicated. What was happening? It is. All the different parts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So why don't we start off with our poetry haiku and our limerick?
Yes.
Our synopsis, our poetry synopsis. Okay. Here's my haiku for Year of Hell, Part One.
Thank you.
Anorax obsessed. Voyager falling apart. We abandon ship.
Mm.
Now I have an alternate. I have an alternate third line. Okay. Here's the alternate. Okay. Anorax obsessed. Voyager falling apart. Chakotay Tom gone.
Oh, I like that one. I like that one better.
Okay. All right. We'll use that one.
Both good. They're both really good.
Make a note for the compilation poetry book. Yeah, the published poetry synopsis of Voyager that we put together. Okay.
Here's my limerick for Year of Hell Part One. The Krenim want 100% restoration, willing to destroy anything in their desperation. Voyager suffers continued attacks, only emergency rations for snacks. Escape pods offer the only salvation.
Nice. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah.
Rebecca. Good. That's your hybrid name, Rebecca.
We got escape pods in there. So,
Good. Yeah. That's very impressive.
And snacks, which is very important.
That was the most impressive part of your. Uh-huh. Your limerick was
getting snacks.
You got snacks in there.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
So there you go. There's our poetry. But let's get back to this episode. It is written by Brandon Braga and Joe Manosky, two of the brainiest brains ever to write Star Trek. Very smart guys.
Yeah.
Directed by Alan Craker, who we love.
Oh, good old Alan. Yeah.
Yes. And I do remember shadowing on this a bit.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Okay. I do remember coming in. I don't think full time or anything like that, but I do remember coming into some of the Kurtwood Smith scenes on his ship and seeing how they were laying this out and how they were blocking things. I thought it was really elegant. There was sort of this, these levels to the ship kind of behind the captain's chair. And there was this, long sort of hall, you know, runway in front of Kurtwood Smith's chair. Yeah. And so they laid down this circle track, which I had never seen before because we didn't carry circle track. Mm-mm. But they had actually built the set in a way that that circle track could fit into that space.
Wow.
So they built it for the track knowing that they were going to be moving the camera in that way. And so
why don't you explain, Robbie, explain what a circle track is to people that don't know.
So the way the cameras traditionally operate is you have your camera and that's mounted onto a head, which is either a wheels, like old fashioned wheels that the operators turn to move the camera, tilt and pan, or it's a fluid head, which is kind of a stick like a lot of us have seen on our tripods for our cameras at home. You have a little stick and you can tilt it and pan it. Yeah. So there's the head, and then the head sits on top of a dolly, or if it doesn't have to move, it could sit on top of a tripod, it could sit on top of a number of things. But the camera and the head sit on a dolly, and then the dolly, if you're going to move it, you usually put it on track. It looks like railroad track.
Yep.
And the track, most track is straight track. Most all dolly moves, 99% of dolly moves are on straight track.
Correct.
They push in, they pull out, they go across. Circle track is what, like it sounds, it's track that's meant to go in a circle and you can choose it because the angle or the circumference of that circle could be larger if you want a larger circle or smaller if you want a smaller circle. Mm-hmm. Circle track is more specialty items that you don't typically carry. So they had designed this set with that runway for circle track of a certain diameter. to fit so that they could wrap around. And yeah. And that was, I don't know if Alan Craker had a lot to do with that, but I do remember when I was watching this episode, I remember, oh yes, I was shadowing. I do remember that track and never seeing.
Yeah.
We never used it on our track really that often. I think
you're right. It's rare. 1% of the time, probably in filming in the 90s, yep. that someone use a circle track. So
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very cool though.
Yeah. So I do remember that, but Alan Craker did a phenomenal job. I mean, I think some of his staging and the photography, the way that particularly on Kurtwood Smith's ship.
Yeah.
I thought it was, they were just elegantly directed scenes. It's just a masterclass in staging and shot making. It was really, really well done.
Yeah. And that is how we open up this episode, is a scene on the Krenim timeship. Mm-hmm. And we see they are eradicating a Zal colony or settlement. Mm-hmm. They call it a temporal incursion, is what they call it. Yes. Throughout the that's the euphemistic way of saying what they're doing. And after they send that wave, that weapon where they eradicate all life, then they probe the continuum, and then the Krenim ship captain, played by Kurtwood Smith, then asks, has our target event been achieved? And we don't really know what the target event is yet in part one. You know, we're not sure what he's trying to do.
They're looking for a particular, some of this language to me was hard to follow because it is sort of, it's sci-fi language, but in a Tom Paris way, I guess I would say, like, what are they trying to do? They're trying to hit a specific time in history and recapture
something there—a
moment in time, where something was happening, and we don't know what exactly.
Well, we kind of get clues of it because we hear later on in the episode, Kurtwood Smith's Anorax asks his first officer. He says, "Well, what about the one colony on?"
Yeah, the one colony.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, "No."
He goes, "That didn't happen." You know, this because he talks about a 98%. Restoration. So that 0.2, that 2% non-restored part of the timeline is including that one little colony. So obviously that colony has something to do with it.
Yeah, right? for sure. And like you said, this opening scene sort of sets up the circumstances well, because even the very first shot is this sort of high angle on some planet that has all kinds of, it's a big city. On some planet.
Yeah.
And by the way, it looks like a water treatment plant to me. It looked like the way it was designed. I was like, that looks like a giant water treatment plant, but it was a city.
Yeah.
And then this weapon fires from space, fires this kind of wave that we don't know what that is, the energy wave. Mm-hmm. But everything sort of, as the wave washes over it, it washes this entire city away, and all that's left is a
river.
Yeah. So it's a great visual in that first scene that you see, this is what these guys do. And we don't know if they just wipe out the physical part of the city, but it looks like everything is gone. And you get this idea that in some way they've restored it back to what it was before
that civilization showed up. Right.
Yeah. So so now we know about those guys. And then we go to our opening credits. When we come back, we are inaugurating the astrometrics lab for the very first time. We're seeing this set.
Yeah.
And I had forgotten that Harry and Seven were the two people that combined Starfleet and Borg ingenuity to create this entirely new technology, Janeway said.
Yeah, new mapping technology.
And you say it's 10 times more accurate than what we've been using. So the Borg and the Starfleet, combo is pretty powerful. That's what that says to me. Like, that's pretty cool.
It is. It's a good combination. I was laughing at the part because at the end of this, the doctor has his little comedic moment, like the only comedic moment in this entire episode. And he's talking about, I need to share this story. And he talks about how we've come together as a family, and he lists everybody. And at the end he goes, and even Mr. Paris. And I thought, what a backhanded, I don't know what that, it just, that's kind of there like was, a verbal I, slap in the face. It's sort of
feel like our writers, and I'd be curious, because I feel like our writers found their comedy in this sort of snarky, snipey kind of way. Like, People do it all the time. They find comedy, you know, Tuvok says things that are just kind of snarky and snipey. And, you know, people talk about Neelix in a snarky and snipey way. Yeah. Like that's often our writer's version of comedy or lighthearted moments was that sort of thing. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Even Mr. Paris.
Even Mr.
It's funny, but it's just kind of snarky. So,
yeah. And I don't want to, you know, I feel like we didn't really mention how grave the situation is with this time ship. I mean, that's crazy. If you think about the Borg being, okay, they're assimilating everybody, but this race, they're not even assimilating people. They're like, okay, we're just going to just make you vanish from existence. Okay.
Well, it's interesting because
everything that you have ever known about these people are going to be gone, which is even more devastating, right?
It is a incredibly powerful tool or weapon. Yeah. In fact, later on, we'll get to this scene much later on, but when there's a bit of a chase with this ship, we learn that they can only go up to warp 6.
That's so right.
We've got technology to outrun them.
Right.
But they don't really, typically, they've not needed it because they can just shoot out this weapon.
Yeah.
And we can't outrun their weapon. So they don't have to fly that fast. They just have to shoot this freaking time change thing.
And, and that's it.
Yeah.
But they can't do the, what they, you know, their typical MO is they figure out what's going on and they head to that home world and then take out the home world. Right.
Yeah.
But knowing that we're from the Alpha Quadrant, 65,000 light years away, they cannot go to our home world and take out Earth and then take us out too, basically. So that is one thing that they don't have.
Yeah. And I wonder, this is going to get answered, I'm sure. It's just occurring to me in this moment, you know, with this time wave that they send out, it sort of erases, it changes time and moves time around. Well, they sent that wave out in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. We got hit by this wave.
Yeah.
And in theory, we should be eradicated.
Or we should be back in the Alpha Quadrant.
Or we should be back in the Alpha Quadrant or something.
Right.
Like there's something about, because later on, don't mean to give away a spoiler, but most of you that are listening to this have seen this episode at least once. later on, after Seven develops this phase, you know, changes the phase variance on our shields to protect us from the torpedoes, the chronoton torpedoes. And then I guess I would say that at that point we're safe from these weapons.
Mm-hmm.
But in the very first scene, we didn't have that technology. So why are we even alive?
Because that wave wasn't directed at us. That was just an after effect. That was just the residual wave, I feel. I think if we were at the heart of that wave, we would have been screwed.
Mm.
But because that was, you know, light years away from where we're at, we've just experienced the residual, it's a lighter version of the wave. That's what I'm thinking. Right. I mean, that wave can't, when they hit that wave, it's targeted towards one planet, one settlement, one species, one civilization, towards the entire quadrant,
that makes, it's just now all of a sudden I'm starting to put some of this logic together.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they argued this in the room and they've got
an answer for it, but
there is, like, this weapon should be almost, you know, totally indefensible. Like you should, you know, we do come up with the one defense. Seven comes up with that later on. But at this point, we should have suffered the consequences of this weapon and we didn't.
Yeah.
And we're kind of in these battles where we're losing decks and parts of our ship. And obviously the ship's getting destroyed and damaged a lot. But yeah, this technology is kind of like, it's a game changer in a way that I don't know how we've even survived one episode of this stuff.
Yeah.
But,
and now I need to ask you a very important question.
Yes, sir.
What do you think of Janeway's hair?
I did make a note right here at the end of We're Called to the Bridge. By the way, I did love, I'm going to get to her hair in a second, but Seven's got a line where she talks about the Zal, this species that's here that we're going to meet one of their guys in a minute.
Yeah.
But, she talks about the Zal and she says, their resistant quotient is quite low.
Mm.
I never heard the term. Well, their resistance quotient is quite low. I just never heard that term. It's very funny.
How Borg of her to say that.
How Borg of her.
Yeah.
So we leave, and I did make a note right here. I was like, is this Kate's real hair for the first time? I feel like it might be.
I don't. Well, the irony of this is that for me is that the hair that she is, you know, the her hairstyle in Astrometrics in the beginning before all the crap hits the fan. It's identical to Genevieve Bujold's hair season one.
Yes, it
day
is.
Day one.
It is.
The one day that she worked. That's it. You know, and I thought, oh, my gosh, look at that. You know,
it's come full circle.
It took four seasons for Janeway to get her hair to where Genevieve Bujold basically insisted upon having it. Just kind of just short and just no nonsense. Right. And so there it is. Paris's hair is doing something weird in this scene too. I don't know what was going on.
A little loosey goosey.
A little loosey goosey, but
yeah.
But Janeway's hair definitely was the standout.
There was a lot of different hair versions to watch in this episode with
her. That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, we go to the bridge and we see this Krenim commandant. I guess they have, male pattern baldness in the Krenim because he was a bald man. And so was Kurtwood Smith. And, so maybe that's part of this species. Genetic male pattern baldness happening.
Yes. Yeah. It is of note, though, that when we're on the bridge, we think this is the Zal that are firing on us, right? Because we're like, oh my God. And then what? Krenim, the Krenim Imperium. Who is this guy?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, the other important note I wrote down is when we go to the bridge, Janeway's
line. Her line.
Not Janeway's line, but she's spoken to by Ensign Lang, played by Deborah Levin. She's at the tactical. This is the same one that got shot by the phaser on the bridge. And she's like,
she does
that whole like, convulsing kind of falling down when she gets phasered. Right. Ensign Lang.
Ensign Lang will end up dying in this episode.
Really?
She's the one that's on the ground later. We'll get to that.
Somebody are you sure about
there's
that?
There's a woman on the ground. I assumed was it was her. Lang because she was right there. Well, we'll get to that.
I have to
look
at that anyway. Yeah.
Okay, so we're on the bridge. We're talking to this Krenim commandant, and I love they're firing these little torpedoes.
Yeah.
We think they're not DLP shooters. We think they're not a threat. I love Kate's line. She says, "With all due respect, unless you've got something bigger in your torpedo tubes, I am not turning around."
Well, bow chicka bow wow to that. What?
What you got in those torpedo tubes, Mr. Krenim? By the way, so the guy that's playing the Zal officer, Rick Fitz is his name.
Yes.
He has appeared in over 125 television shows. I looked at his credits, our Zal officer, Rick Fitz, who tells us all about the Krenim.
Mm-hmm.
But he has done
his resume.
It's insane
as long as our body. That resume. He has so many credits. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but he's our Zal officer. So the Krenim, the male pattern baldness Krenim commandant, retreats, and we cut to Rick Fitz explaining. He apologizes about the Krenim. He said a generation ago, the Zal defeated them, and their vessels. Some of their vessels still wander the area. But they're not going to be any trouble. Yeah. And we go back out to the bridge. And now this commandant is really pissed off. And he's like, you're still here. That's it. We're going to attack.
Let's take this time to talk about the actor playing that role of the Krenim commandant.
Yes.
That actor's name is Peter Slutsker. That's what he's credited as. Peter Slutsker.
But
he changed his name to Peter Marks, M-A-R-X. And you know what? I get it. Okay. If your last name has the word slut in it, it's a little difficult, you know.
Peter Slutsker.
Slutsker, exactly.
I think Peter Slutsker dated a friend of mine back in the 80s, way back in the day. Yes.
Interesting.
I think Peter was a musical theater guy.
Yeah.
He's
born in New York City. There he,
He
also has other Star Trek credits. He has Star Trek Next Generation, three credits, all as Ferengi. He played Nybor, Rega, and Berta. Berta. These are three Ferengi characters that he played in Star Trek TNG. There's actually a photo of him I found posing next to Gene Roddenberry on set of Next Generation.
Oh, really?
So yeah, oh, so you know, he got to meet Gene, which is something that I didn't get to do.
I didn't either.
You didn't either. So no. You know, Peter Slutsker is the lucky dog in that one. So yeah, just want to give him props right there.
Yeah. Anyway, so while we're talking to this commandant, I think Harry picks up a spatial distortion, is headed right at us. It's 5 light years across. That's giant.
That's huge.
5 light years across.
Yeah.
And it came from a vessel, we say, near the Zal homeworld. That's where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And this giant temporal field is headed our way. And we hit this space-time shockwave, hits the ship.
Yeah.
And we've lost engines. We basically we disappear. The space shot of our ship sees this wave come across us, and we just disappear out of that space.
Yeah.
So I guess in a way, what I was bringing up before, I forgot about this. We did disappear out of that timeline.
Did we disappear? Is that what happened? I mean, the wave eradicates the Rick Fitz character, right? He and his other Zal lackey or whatever, they're on the bridge and they disintegrate, right? They're gone.
They're gone.
The Zal ships also are eradicated. And all of a sudden that Krennim ship, the Krennim ship that has Peter Marks in it, that gets upgraded. It goes from a slight, you know, a kind of a thinner, smaller ship to a more imposing ship, right? And so you're saying we disappeared at this point.
Well, and I wrote down, I put a note here that we disappear when we lose engines, when the impact happens.
Yeah.
I made a note. It looks like a space shot that I was referring to outside where as the wave came across the ship, our ship disappeared.
Okay.
And then we probably cut back inside to, which, yes, that's my next note. We cut back inside to the bridge.
Yeah.
And I think Chakotay says she's dead to an officer, one of our Starfleet officers lying on the ground.
Who I think is Ensign Lang.
Yes. I think that's Ensign Lang. She's laying in the same spot where someone died last week's episode. So I'm going to say that that is a bad luck spot.
Don't stand in that spot on the bridge because
you'll likely be dead.
That is the Bermuda Triangle of the Voyager bridge. You do not want to be anywhere near there. Clearly.
No, I think that was Ensign Lang on the floor.
Okay.
Although nobody seemed to care that much.
No, that Ensign Lang was
dead. No, they were like, yeah, she's dead.
Like, oh, that's the one that died really. I mean, that's the one that was phasered so awkwardly. It's okay if she passes. People don't even care. Okay. Yeah. But I'm going to double check to make sure I'm going to watch it again to see if that really is her. Voyager is a complete mess. On the Krennim time ship, 98% restoration is not good enough, because this is when Kurtwood Smith's Anorax, the character of Anorax, then asks his first officer, what about that colony? What about the Krennim colony? Has that survived in this timeline? They're like, no, it's not there. So
by the way, the colony's name was, he says, was the colony at Keanu Prime restored as well?
Keanu Reeves? What?
That's what I said.
You wrote that down, didn't you?
It's Keanu Prime.
Keanu Prime.
They made a whole colony out of Keanu.
Oh, that's so cool.
I love it. I love it.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, he was clearly haunted by whatever happened at this colony.
Yeah.
And something is personal for him, you can tell in there.
So. Right. There's a shot in the Voyager corridor where the doctor is escorting all these, you know, patients, basically all these injured and non-injured crew members to safety. Yes. And Janeway is deploying mines, torpedoes, yeah, like
she
mines.
She says, use our torpedoes. How many torpedoes do we have left?
Four.
I think four torpedoes, that was
yeah.
it? So
yeah.
She says, yes, let's use them like mines.
So, mines, yeah. So
we kind of dump them out.
Yeah.
A bunch of them out like torpedoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it does destroy the ship or, you know, there's a structural collapse. And I love when...
Your reaction?
My reaction. I'm like, got him. And I clap my hands.
You hit the console.
I hit the console.
You hit your console and you're like, got him, and you yell very loudly.
I know.
That's a lot of emotion.
I was excited.
That was really good. I just don't recall you having that much emotion ever in 7 years, like on the bridge.
It was good.
So that was super emotional. So yeah, that was okay. I'm okay with that one.
I was excited. Yes. Kate does, the ship takes a hit. Kate goes down to the floor.
Yeah.
And I just love what her hair did. It was like,
oh, it's just
all
like,
the hairspray just held it together.
It
kind of flipped forward and she comes up and it's sort of sticking up.
Yeah. Sticking amazing, up like an 80s sort of
amazing
like
hair. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting hair episode.
She says to Chakotay though, she says, you take the bridge or what's left of it.
Yeah.
And she tosses this piece of plastic. And I was like, where do all these random pieces of plastic, like what part of our ship are those things? And I did make a note later on as it gets worse and worse. Like, if you recall, they would put all this debris out on the floor that was just sort of these random heated up pieces of plastic that was sort of look bent. And then a lot of cork, like black spray painted cork.
Cork. Yeah.
So it would sort of crumble. It was just cork. And I'm like, I was watching this episode thinking, what part
of
the
cork.
Ship is made of cork? Like it looks fine.
It's the USS bulletin board. You know that.
And again, as the ship gets more and more, you start to see on the bulkheads and on the walls behind us that they had put like some paper mache that they sort of bunched up.
They made it look warped, right? Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but you could see the squares, like you could see the edges.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what part of the ship gets damaged like that?
Right.
Like, it just was. I think they wanted a lot of mess and they, you know, and that was the most, I guess, cost effective way to tell that story was a lot of cork, a lot of plasticky stuff and a lot of paper mache on the walls.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So it jumps back and forth between the bridge and the corridor with the doctor. And then finally the doctor has to make this horrible decision, which is that area of the ship is about to just implode. Right. So he has to shut the hatch on some of the couple of the crew that are trying to run towards him.
Yeah.
And they're gone. That's basically the end of that crew, because we find out from Harry on the bridge that sections 10 to 53 on deck 5 are gone. It's completely gone. No more. So now we see this is a serious situation for the crew, you know, that we're dealing with something that we've never dealt with before. And this is hardcore. Janeway's ready room. Chakotay and Janeway are together. Chakotay suggests abandoning ship, splitting into smaller groups. And Janeway is like, no, we have to stay together. This is the only way we're going to survive. We need to stay together.
Stronger together. Use each other's strengths and talents.
And
we need everybody's talents here.
And the tag on that scene was just awesome, like where Chakotay finds the one. Oh, hey, this is still intact. Yeah,
well,
lucky teacup.
She goes, my lucky teacup. And then, bam, there's another shot.
Right.
She puts it down on her desk. And as they walk out, the desk starts shaking. And the lucky teacup hits the floor and cracks.
Yeah. Look at that. That's,
what a
that's
metaphor.
The foreshadowing
for
her
bad
right?
luck.
Yeah.
Yes.
There it is. There it is.
We come back and it says day 47 at this point, if for those keeping score at home.
Yeah.
It says day 47 and Harry and Bellano, we got a shot of, I had to go back and look at it. I'm like, what is this I'm looking at? I hear their voices, but I didn't know. We were inside the shaft of the turbo lift, I guess. So we were looking
at. Oh, is that what that is? Okay.
But that's
shut off. There was a hatch closed there too, right? So I guess that was part of
it was like an elevator shaft that we were in.
So we're stuck.
You guys were stuck in a turbo lift.
Yeah.
And we're playing. We see you playing movie trivia or
quiz. Kind of I say playing quiz show is what I said, right?
Yeah.
And I totally forgot about this scene in Toy Solid. I said, "Oh, I remember this." And then as I'm watching it, I love that they didn't make me reshoot they let me kind of play with this scene a little bit because when she doesn't guess, she guesses the wrong actor. And I say Cary Grant. And did you notice that I did Cary Grant's name? When I said Cary Grant's name, I said it in Cary Grant's voice, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Cary Grant, you know? So I did that and they let me keep that, which I was really excited
about.
Yeah,
that was good. That was fun. Yeah. I like the scene.
Yeah.
Could you possibly, you talk about athletes, famous athletes, and you guessed the right athlete.
Can
you repeat his name right now?
I cannot.
I was like, what the heck?
It was Klingon.
You like spit it out.
I spit it out. Like
it was good.
It was like my cousin's name. I knew it. Yeah.
It was good, but
that
was fun. And so she's injured, but I couldn't tell what was injured because she was sort of holding her legs. I'm like, did she hurt her knee? Did she skin her knee?
We find out
later that she's got a ruptured spine or something.
Vertebrae. Like that. Yes. Yeah, it was internal. I don't think it was anything to do with her leg, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of, as I'm consoling her, I'm kind of touching on her leg just to make her feel better, right?
Yeah.
Then I felt like, oh my gosh, Tom would be mad that I'm this touchy with his woman.
No, she's injured.
Okay.
Console people in the world.
Seven and a crowbar come to the rescue.
Yes.
Right.
She opens the door and she says the entire turbo lift system is down.
Yeah.
And then, as you start moving down the hall, she says, by the way, the ship was the Phoenix. And she also says the Borg were present.
Yeah.
It's a complicated story. I'm like, what?
I'll tell you later, but the Borg were there. And I thought, oh man, is this another,
Borg were there when, Zefram Cochrane.
Yeah.
Flew the Phoenix?
When we had first contact with the Vulcans. Yeah, the Borg were somehow watching or observing this. Yeah.
This just sounds like something. They didn't even know what they were saying, but they were just
either that, or I thought maybe they were setting it up for some type of movie thing, you know, in the future down the road. Like, this is okay. We can introduce this idea and this will become some type of feature film idea. I don't know.
Yeah, she goes complicated story. And so we don't hear the answer.
No, we don't.
And then we cut back up onto the bridge and Janeway and Chakotay and Paris are standing there. They're talking about reconfiguring some of the bulkheads. And Chakotay says, well, this was all Paris's idea.
Yes.
And Janeway basically calls me a genius.
She said, ingenious. And it was your idea.
The reverse hull idea.
The transverse bulkheads idea from Paris.
Yeah.
And then Paris is like, I got that idea from the Titanic. And then Jane was like, didn't that thing sink? Yeah. I've done the calculations.
I made
a few improvements. It's better now. Trust me.
And then the doctor calls and says, I need you in the mess hall immediately.
Yeah.
And so Tom Paris leaves that scene with, well, I guess I'm a popular guy today.
Yeah.
So I head to the mess hall. We now go to Seven is in a Jeffries tube and she's climbing down and she discovers an undetonated Chronoton torpedo that is lodged in our bulkhead.
Yeah.
And
starboard. Jeffrey's tube bulkhead.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, I love how she goes, arrive quickly. She tells Tuvok to arrive quickly.
Yeah, she tells. That's right. We go to the mess hall and Paris
is
helping.
Now a triage area. The mess hall is where everyone's getting fixed up, right? Yeah.
And Paris is helping B'Elanna. And I did like this scene with Paris and B'Elanna.
Yeah.
And then the doctor, Doc comes
super
by.
Snappy.
He's like, you need to get over here. I need you.
Yeah.
And Paris does not want to leave her. And then the doc lectures Paris on staying detached.
Like,
you know, she's not dying. Other people need you.
Yeah.
And he shares the story of when he had to seal the hatch on the two crewmen.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting
little moment. But he doesn't share that until you say, physician, heal thyself.
Physician,
you say that under your breath, right? And he's like, what? So, yeah.
Yeah, I was a little judgy. Strickler, I was a little judgy with that.
You were. Ensign Strickler and Crewman Emanuel, if we just got to give them some props, some credit, since they're now dead. So we want to be able to say, RIP, Ensign Strickler and Crewman Emanuel.
Yeah. So we have a nice little scene with the doctor. And then we go to back to the tube and Tuvok's showing up. And he's like, we've got to get out of here. And she goes, no, I need sevens. Like, I gotta figure out this temporal
variance.
And he said, I'm ordering you, ordering you to get out of here. And finally, she starts to exit when she's gotten this 1.47 microsecond variance. But this thing does detonate. And it's bad news for Tuvok,
Well, did you notice he shields 7 of 9? Did you notice that when the explosion happens, he turns his body to shield her to keep her from getting hit by the so he's really a stand up guy to do that.
Him.
Yeah,
he's a stand up guy, but she should have listened to him. Yeah, this is where I made the note. We come back to day 65, and the ship looks really bad, and they're eating emergency rations now, they say. And
Replicators are knocked out, right?
Yeah. And there's cork and melted plastic everywhere. And I remember when they were redoing all of these bulkheads with that paper mache stuff, it was a big deal because they had to restore it. In fact, I'm trying to remember when this episode was over. Like, they needed some time to restore our ship. I guess we'll get there as we get down these episodes, but doing all this destruction and then having to undo it took time, you know, and usually we were shooting on our ship every day, 5 days a week.
Oh yeah.
And so you didn't have time to hand it over to the construction department for a few days for them to do these kind of things.
No.
So it was tricky scheduling.
Very
and logistics.
Yeah. So after that captain's log where she talks about the emergency rations, now we're back on the bridge. And Chakotay is giving Janeway a gift of an old pocket watch that he's replicated.
Yes.
And he says, happy
Craves,
birthday.
Yeah. Captain Craves was a captain of a ship that was hit by a typhoon in the Pacific. Mm-hmm. And this is a replica of the watch. They did survive. And
So some symbolism there, right?
Yeah. And this is for her birthday, which is May 20th. Because she says, oh, it's May 20th?
Yes.
I forgot.
Nobody remembers that. Now that we see that, and now if you're, you know, I'm into astrology. You know what sign that is, right?
No, what is it?
I know this because my sister's birthday is May 18th, Taurus, which makes perfect sense now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Tauruses are notoriously the most stubborn.
Oh, that's
every
funny.
Zodiac. Yeah, and his Janeway is so stubborn. It's so perfect. It's just, you know, it's Janeway or the highway, right? So I thought. I'm sure it was inadvertent, but the fact that it perfectly landed on a sign that makes sense for Janeway, astrological sign, was really kind of it made me smile. I thought that's okay. But Janeway doesn't accept it. She says, look, you know, we can't even.
She wants it recycled.
Recycle this thing. I'm sorry, you know. Yeah. So.
And by the way, we haven't talked about Chakotay's beard in this scene. He's got sort of a beard. I was like, does he have a smudge on his face or is that a beard? No, it's a beard.
I talk about it in my reaction videos.
It must have been like the little stipple paint or something that they put on.
It just reminded me of like a little kid trying to do a beard to match their dad. It's what it looked like. It was a little, it was a little sketchy.
Yeah,
I agree.
We go into Tuvok's quarters and we see him with a straight razor. And he's shaving.
Looks like a straight razor. I don't know. That thing looked like a ceremonial dagger of some
sort. It did. It looked, it was kind of curved.
Yeah.
Like almost like a sickle. Like a old fashioned sickle. But it was a razor and he cuts himself. And this is the moment where we reveal, Tuvok's blind. This is the moment.
He has a scar over his eye. And I wrote down a Vulcan circumcision tool is what he used to shave himself. I mean, what is that? It was really bizarre. He's blind now. He has he has no sight whatsoever. And
Seven comes in. Yeah. And she escorts him out. And you can see that he sort of reaches. Yeah. This was a sad moment.
Very sad. And she came in there because she has an idea about modifying the deflectors to help out the cause. Mm-hmm. And now we jump to the corridor where Seven is escorting Tuvok down the hallway. And now we see Sue Henley. Sue Henley says Seven. So another Sue Henley chance at having a line.
Yeah.
Kate Mulgrew's stand-in, Sue Henley
got a line here.
I didn't know that. Do we know, is this the first time we hear her name as well?
Yeah.
I don't recall.
Yeah. What is Seven? Seven calls her something. I can't
Ensign
remember.
Brooks. Her name is Ensign Brooks.
Yeah. Ensign Brooks. And she talks about that. She's my cabin mate now. And I thought it was funny because she says something like, you know, when I was on the Borg in the collective, I lived with hundreds of drones, but living with one human is more difficult.
Yeah. Definitely. Now we see Neelix. He shows up in a gold Starfleet uniform and he asks Tuvok, and he looks good in the Starfleet uniform.
By the way, when I first saw him in the Starfleet uniform, I was like, I was thinking, I said to Rebecca, I'm like, wait, haven't we seen him in a Starfleet uniform before? It was in the episode where Kes was going jumping time. Remember when Kes was jumping around?
Yes.
We jumped to a moment where they were, something was going on with time.
Yeah.
And he was in that gold uniform.
That's right.
And
that's
that was this episode. I bet they were setting up.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. Mm-hmm. They jumped to this episode with his gold Starfleet uniform. So he asked Tuvok what to program for the audio signal. So a nice little comedic moment here when he's like, should it be intruder alert or should it be intruders among us? Danger, danger. So he's like, you know, this was a nice little moment of relief, a little bit of comedic relief.
Yes.
And there's really only two moments of comedic relief in here. The doctor's little speech in the beginning in Astrometrics and here with Neelix. And that's it.
It's about it for comedy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking about Lost in Space, the robot from Lost in Space.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. I felt like there was a little bit of an homage to that.
Yeah.
So now they head to battle stations because
Chakotay,
Krenim are approaching and the bridge looks really bad at this point. Beams have fallen down. Tuvok is blindly taking his station. The Krenim are firing. Temporal shields are working.
Yeah.
Harry says,
did you notice he's able to switch his console to a tactile display or something so he can like read Braille or something on it.
I thought the same thing.
I mean, with everything all malfunctioning like that, he's able to do that. I thought that's pretty impressive. So,
he's got a Braille.
Yeah.
Yes. And he reads Braille. He's learned that very quickly.
He's learned it very quickly. So Tuvok tells Seven to go to the deflector control and bring the new shields online, and we'll just test it while we're going to battle. This will be our test, right? Mm-hmm. We're on the bridge, and Janeway is making sure, you know, requesting that Seven get this thing online. She finally brings him online, and sure enough, the Krenim fire upon us, and the temporal shields are holding. They actually stop.
They work.
Yeah, they work.
And then Harry says, "There's a giant temporal wave approaching."
Distortion wave coming in. Yeah.
When the shields work and that wave does hit, the Krenim ship is changed to a much older, kind of smaller model. The ship changes as the wave passes over it. Makes no sense. Chakotay says that the whole region has actually changed.
Yeah, all the Krenim settlements that are there are gone. There's only a few ships that are flying in the area, whereas this used to be heavily populated Krenim air.
It was the Krenim Imperium. And now there's a few scattered colonies and a few ships. That's it.
Yeah.
So it's very confusing. And we cut over to the Krenim weapon ship, and Anorax is furious. He's
he's mad because they went to eradicate the Garinor homeworld. Right? Mm-hmm. And so that's where that displacement wave, spatial distortion wave came from when they fired the weapon on the Garinor homeworld, which eradicated them. But then because we had our temporal shields on, that tweaked all their calculations. And that's why the Krenim warship following us turns into this nothing ship, right?
Well, they literally say scans reveal an inert element that shouldn't be there.
Yeah,
I guess we're the inert element.
Well, no, he says that we are typically We've already scanned that ship. It was considered an inert element. So meaning it doesn't really affect it, but because they had our sheet, because we threw these shields on,
temporal shields running,
that changed everything.
I see.
Right. So,
well, he's pissed off.
Yeah, he's not.
And he's like, let's get over there.
Yeah.
They had to intercept us. Yeah. We cut to, now it says day 70 on the screen. We're in Astrometrics and Janeway and Seven have a great scene together.
Yeah.
Where they're really puzzling through things. And Janeway brings up this idea of a causality paradox.
Yes. Yes.
Where is if the idea that if you eliminate one species, that all of history is altered, that because we are so interwoven as, if you think about our planet, if you eliminate one animal species, that it changes the whole balance of nature. Mm-hmm. And the same would apply to space,
Yeah. And it's so funny that when you watch this episode, if you just think about the whole Star Trek concept of the Prime Directive, where we don't interfere with other people's business. And whereas this Krenim time ship is the exact polar opposite. Yep. We do interfere with everybody's business. Anytime we feel free, we're going to do it. Right. That's so they're anti-Starfleet, the exact opposite. So the Krenim are anti-matter and Starfleet are matter, basically. Right. The two cannot exist together. The Krenim time ship appears and they abduct two crew members to test them. And of course, it's Chakotay and Paris.
Paris and Chakotay.
They're beamed out. Yep.
He says he has transferred us for further analysis.
Yes. So you guys are going to get probed by the aliens. That's what's about to happen. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, they fire the weapon upon us, but we figure out that they don't travel any faster than warp 6, like we said before. So we escape at warp 7. The ship is falling apart. And then we come up on that final scene where we're in the mess hall triage area and Janeway gives her speech to the crew about evacuating the ship. Escape pods are equipped with subspace beacons, so we will be able to find everyone. The senior staff will stay on the ship and try to figure everything else out. We're going to try to save Chakotay and Paris. And, good luck.
Good luck. Everyone. And then we finish on the outside, out in space. We see the outside of the ship, these hatches opening.
Yeah.
And all these cool little pods shooting out of the side, popping out of the side of Voyager. That's the last image. And it says to be continued. So part 2, we'll see what happens. But I love that last shot of all the pods coming out. I thought it was very cool.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What is your lesson for this episode?
My lesson is that you can never completely erase the past. I think I sort of struggled with it, but I was like, well, they had that 98% success rate. And, the henchman guy is going, it's just never going to, like, this is as good as it's going to get.
He's
like, no, we have to keep trying. Yeah. My theme is you can't ever completely erase the past or recapture the past. Like you can't, you can't erase it. You can't recreate it. That you just can't, completely. You may be able to recreate parts of the past and some parts of the experiences that you've had, but you're never, you just can't control time. Even in sci-fi, people like these Krenim people with all their technology cannot completely control time.
Yeah.
But there's some things that are still mysterious and untouchable. So,
I think for me, I really kind of focused in on what the doctor had to deal with in shutting that hatch, and that underlying lesson is sort of that lesson that you've heard a lot in Star Trek, which is the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, right? Because if he kept that door open for those few, for the two, really that would have jeopardized the entire crew, really, right? So he had to make that decision, and that's sometimes not the popular decision, but it's the decision that has to be made. So
Well, even seven, not listening to Tuvok and staying to try to figure out the 1.47 microns or whatever. Yep. She was thinking of the needs of the many. If I can do this, I can. And
she was.
And Tuvok did suffer the consequences of that, of her delay. Mm-hmm. But because she delayed, she was able to save the ship from what would have been destruction at that
point. Correct.
So,
okay.
Interesting. What's your rating on this?
I'm going to give it a, seven. I'm going to give it a seven.
That's interesting. What we're very close. I have 6.5 out of 10.
6.5. Oh, I almost said 6.5, but I was like, you know what? I'll round up. So
I was going to say six. My first instinct was a six. Cause I got to be honest. I didn't love this episode. It's okay.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that in part two, it will pay off. It was okay. I felt like it was just very action packed in a way that I wasn't invested in this theme of time and of, or even the theme that you had with the doctor's theme of the needs of the many. Like, I just didn't feel like those themes were landed in the dialogue or the story in a way that felt really, there were moments. There was the moment with Paris and B'Elanna when they were, you know, she was suffering in the mess hall and he was trying to be empathetic and tender with her. Yeah, and it was moments with the doctor. But I don't know. It just felt like these moments that didn't quite get super deep for me. So 6.5.
Well, let's hope part two is better for you.
I'm excited to see part two. It was a lot of fun to watch. And like I said, I think there were, you know, Alan Craker directed a masterclass in terms of some of the staging and things he did. So there's a lot of things about it. I love the big idea of trying to continue to reset time until you get back to this perfect moment in time that you're looking for.
Yeah.
Those ideas, there's a lot of good ideas in here, but I just felt like in the end I was left with a 6.5. Yeah.
Did you go 6.5 also because of paper mache and corkboard?
A little bit. I felt like, a little bit like cork on the floor and paper mache. And,
All right. Yeah. Okay. All right, everyone.
All right. Well, that
we'll
was
see
fun.
You next week. Yeah.
We'll see you next week for part two.
Part two.
I am actually very excited to see what happens after this escape pod moment.
I know. We have no clue what's going on with Chakotay and Tom.
No idea.
No clue. Okay. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Join us next week when Robbie and I review The Year of Hell, part two. And for our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.
And we will see all of you next week.